Good morning. President Trump reveals his pick to lead the country's Food and Drug Administration. The U.S. touts a major deal with Canada as it reverses course on steep tariffs. And in Brazil's upcoming elections, Bolsonaro's son looks to take center stage with the help of the White House.
It's going to be a big test of the United States' power and influence over the region.
It's Thursday, August 20th. I'm Cecilia Lay, in for Shimita Basu. This is Apple News Today. The Trump administration has nominated a White House aide to run the FDA, a regulator that hasn't had a permanent leader in months. But it's already looking like she might have a tough time getting confirmed. Dr. Heidi Overton is a deputy assistant to the president with a focus on health issues. In a social media post, Trump described her as a rock star and suggested that she had the full support of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Trump's former FDA commissioner, Marty McCarry, resigned in May after clashes with staff and biotech companies. A wave of other senior figures followed, leaving the FDA in a state of flux and looking for new leadership. Rachel Rubine is a health reporter for The Washington Post.
It's a hugely important role. The FDA is an agency that's really consequential to Americans' daily lives. It's one of the most powerful positions in U.S. healthcare in the government. It oversees drugs, the safety and efficacy of vaccines, tobacco products, and the bulk of the food supply. And the products that FDA regulates account for about 20 cents of every dollar that U.S. consumers spend.
Overton is a physician by training and was a general surgery resident at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. She also worked for the conservative America First Policy Institute, a think tank that often serves as a pipeline to government roles. She has been more of a backroom figure for the White House, occasionally taking the podium to brief on administration policy announcements or updates on issues like Ebola. But her proximity to some of those briefings could cause problems in the Senate. On social media, Republican Senator Bill Cassidy criticized Overton's recent appearance at an announcement of an executive order seeking to reduce the number of childhood vaccinations. Overton was next to Trump as he made false claims about vaccine efficacy and stepped in at one point as well.
We do still recommend the measles vaccine for all children, but we want parents to be informed about the timing and to have the option to separate them out. So, Mr. President, this is a historic action.
Cassidy said that her involvement in that alone is almost disqualifying.
He chairs the Senate Health Committee, but also notable, he lost his primary election race, so he's a little bit more free politically to maybe take certain stands. And because he chairs that committee, he has a big role to play here.
And Democrats will have their own questions. Senator Patty Murray said she would oppose Overton's nomination because of her criticism of the availability of mifepristone, an abortion pill. The Health Committee has already shown a willingness to push back against appointments, forcing Trump to drop his Kennedy-aligned pick for Surgeon General. Rubine reports that some outside candidates turned down the role amid fears of political interference. Trump and Kennedy have sought to pressure the agency into certain decisions on things like peptides and e-cigarettes, and it recently lost its vaccine chief, Dr. Vinay Prasad. He had faced criticism for emails claiming the COVID vaccination was linked to some pediatric deaths.
And that raised a lot of concern from the medical community because he didn't release any of the underlying data or say exactly firm guidances of what he wanted to do.
Though she appears to have Kennedy's backing, not everyone in the MAHA movement is pleased, including some influencers. The Journal reports that Overton didn't favor moves to loosen regulations over marijuana, though she did help rush out Trump's executive order on a review into psychedelics, famously pushed by Joe Rogan.
There are some people in the Make America Healthy Again movement who have not been particularly pleased by her selection as FDA commissioner. And there's a lot of issues that go to the FDA that are important to the Make America Healthy Again movement, which is overseeing chemicals in the food supply, et cetera. But I'm sure she'll get a lot of questions from senators to kind of nail down specifically what some of her thoughts and thinkings are on big ticket items.
Overton doesn't have a food safety background, but if confirmed, she would lead the agency at a delicate time for that very issue. The outbreak of cyclospora and other recent contaminations has put the spotlight on America's produce and the quality of the country's safety oversight. The The Trump administration backed off from imposing steep tariffs on Canada this week, just hours before they were set to take effect, citing a breakthrough in talks.
We've held it back 3 days. It's all subject to finalization of documents. So subject to the finalization of documents, we have a deal with Canada. And I think it's a very good deal for both parties.
Canada was a little more cautious. Its Prime Minister, Mark Carney, wrote in a letter that, quote, substantial progress has been made, although there is important work still to be done. A deal would potentially bring to a close a year and a half of talks defined by threats, standoffs, and uncertainty. The latest set of tariffs had been targeted to strike at certain sectors.
It was kind of a hodgepodge. Some consumer goods, some building materials, plastics, some electronics.
Gavin Bade is a trade and economic policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal.
And importantly, it was not going to be all Canadian products. It was only about $20 billion worth of exports to the United States. That's about 5% of everything that Canada ships to the U.S. each year. So relatively narrow, but tailored to hit specific Canadian industries that the Trump administration thought would be extra impactful and hurt the Canadian economy.
That's off the table for now. But it's still unclear what agreements have been made. Both sides were looking to ultimately scale back the tit-for-tat tariffs introduced over the past year. The U.S. hinted at lowering its duties on metals and auto parts, and Carney has reportedly asked provincial leaders to end their ban on U.S. alcohol sales. Also in play, to the surprise of many, is the Keystone XL pipeline. This contentious oil pipeline would connect Alberta to the U.S., but it was blocked by the Biden and Obama administrations.
Very unclear why this was thrown into the mix here. I didn't have any sources, nor my colleagues, who heard from anyone involved in these talks that anything like the Keystone Pipeline was going to be a subject of conversation here. However, here it rears its head again. You know, this was a very controversial project with Indigenous activists, environmental activists in the United States. It was canceled under President Joe Biden. Trump has talked about wanting to bring it back. We'll have to see what the details of what's going to happen with that.
Even if there's a deal, the talks have only just begun.
Really, what this was as well was to try to get the Canadians to the negotiating table. We're in the midst of renegotiating the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. That's the trade deal that Trump signed in his first term to replace NAFTA. And while the U.S. was making progress in talks with Mexico, they hadn't even opened formal negotiations with Canada yet.
Carney has had to strike a difficult balancing act. The U.S. is his country's biggest trading partner, and Bloomberg reports that he is getting both a deal that's better than other countries, but worse than what they're historically used to. But Bade says he's ultimately one of the few leaders to have stood up to Trump on tariffs.
Well, I think part of this is the political incentives in Canada, right? Mark Carney really won his office by saying he was going to be the best person to stand up to Trump. And the Canadian public is not happy with how the U.S. president has treated their economy and their products, right? And just his rhetoric, or we don't need anything from Canada. Canada should be part of the United States. So there's really not a lot of political incentive in Canada to lay down to President Trump.
Brazil's two main presidential candidates kicked off their campaigns this week in what is expected to be a tight race. President Lula da Silva, a left-wing progressive, is running for a fourth term. He's up against right-wing populist candidate Senator Flavio Bolsonaro, the son of former President Jair Bolsonaro, who was convicted and jailed for attempting a coup. Already, the United States is casting a large shadow over the race. Manuela Andreoni is Reuters' chief correspondent for Brazil.
One of the main things to understand about this race is that it seems that the U.S. wants to have a big influence in Latin American politics.
The White House hasn't formally backed the younger Bolsonaro, but he is a Trump ally like his father. Earlier this year, he spoke at the conservative conference CPAC, where he made a pitch that closely matched up to Trump's foreign policy agenda.
When I return to this stage as president of Brazil, we won't just be celebrating another election victory. We will be celebrating the birth of the strongest conservative alliance in Western Hemisphere history.
His opponent, Da Silva, has accused the Trump administration of meddling in the election by revoking the visa of Brazil's ambassador, raising tariffs on Brazilian exports, and sending U.S. diplomats to Brazil to influence election results. Da Silva spoke to AP about it earlier this week.
Lamentavelmente, eles estão fazendo, sabe?
He told the reporters he wanted good relations, but that the U.S. was spreading falsehoods about his country.
Officials close to Lula have told us that they see the State Department and Marco Rubio as their biggest challenge because they see them trying to push Latin America to more conservative leaders.
The State Department has denied Da Silva's accusations, but Trump has supported Latin America's move to the right in recent years, backing the winners of recent presidential contests in Colombia, Argentina, and elsewhere. Now, Brazil is one of the last major economies in South America led by a leftist. Da Silva defeated former President Jair Bolsonaro in 2022 by 2 million votes. After Bolsonaro tried to hold on to power, he was sentenced in 2025 to nearly 3 decades in prison. Trump was adamantly opposed to the verdict.
Trump started off imposing some of the highest tariffs that any country received to Brazilian products, saying that he was doing so because Brazil had unfairly persecuted Jair Bolsonaro.
And Trump has called for Bolsonaro's release. His son has promised to do just that if elected. Polls are tight, but they show Da Silva with a slight lead over Bolsonaro, who Andreoni notes is also running against 3 other right-wing candidates in this race.
The polls indicate that Lula is on the lead, and actually what is seen as the White House efforts to influence the race are not welcomed by Brazilians. They don't want a government that follows Trump's orders.
Da Silva has his own baggage, of course, including past corruption scandals and a new one involving his son. And at 80 years old, he's already Brazil's oldest president in history. Andreoni says voters in the country are frustrated that this race has come down to 2 candidates with such controversial backgrounds.
People are very displeased with this polarization. People are looking to candidates to tell them how they're going to make the country safer and more affordable. But in many ways, it's a race between who Brazilians dislike the least.
Lula has promised to improve education and healthcare and focus on Brazil's vast reserves of valuable rare earth minerals. Bolsonaro has promised to reduce public debt and crack down on crime. The election is set for October. Here are a few other stories we're following today. The national public debt topped $40 trillion for the first time, drawing fresh warnings of a bubbling fiscal crisis. Mounting costs for social safety net programs and interest payments are far outstripping revenues, which have been further held back by recent tax cuts. As Reuters reports, it means the federal government's IOU has now more than doubled in less than a decade. Roughly a third of that rise is attributed to COVID-related costs, while former President Biden and President Trump continued the trend with tax and spending imbalances. The news came hours after Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent made a fresh attempt to rein in long-term borrowing costs with a complex buyback program. In a shock announcement, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle say they are moving back to the UK this month after 6 years of living in Southern California. The Guardian reports the Duke and Duchess plan to live in a non-royal residence with their 2 children, Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet. The kids are enrolled in a British school for the fall. It's a dramatic shift for the couple who quit their royal duties back in 2020. They've had strained relations with the monarchy following a highly publicized interview with Oprah and a tell-all book. Harry reportedly remains estranged from his brother, Prince William, and has accused the royals of denying his family armed protection, leaving them feeling unsafe in the UK. He did meet the king last month with his children, the first family visit in 4 years, but according to the BBC, this move wasn't discussed. And finally, a family in Texas narrowly avoided a disaster thanks in part to their pet goose. Ah! That's Goosey, waking up his owner, Bert Gerber, in the middle of the night to alert him his barn was on fire. Gerber was able to extinguish the flames with a garden hose and save all 60 of his turkeys and chickens inside. He told the Washington Post a few more minutes and the hose wouldn't have been enough. And surprisingly, this was the first time Gerber ever heard Goosey honk. He said he's usually quiet and pretty shy, but that night, he wasn't just making noise, he was sounding the alarm. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Scientific American reports on the downfall of the Rapa Nui people, famous for carving the massive statues on Easter Island. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.